It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's time for Wisconsin Life, when famed Wisconsin conservationist Aldo Leopold wrote a marshland elegy in 1937, only 24 pairs of sandhill cranes lived in Wisconsin.
In the essay, he wrote about the loss of the ancient species and their wetland habitat. He predicted that one day the last crane will trumpet his farewell and spiral skyward from the Great Marsh.
An Appleton artist and puppeteer read this essay and was inspired to tell a different story focusing on rejuvenation and the relationship between the trumpeting crane and its marshland community. She wrote, directed, and performed in the play called The Lonely Marsh.
WPR producer Mackenzie Crummy sat in on a rehearsal.
There once was a lonely marsh. It lived within the land.
Julia Blair loved the idea of writing a play about an animated, lonely wetland.
The marsh, you may not know by looking at it, used to be a marsh of distinction. For the marsh you see here was once a crane marsh.
Since the 1800s, Wisconsin has lost 50% of local wetlands as industry and agriculture encroached on local marshes. Aldo Leopold wrote in his 1937 essay, Marshland Elegy, that marshes, without cranes, quote, stand humbled, adrift in history. Blair did not like that image, so she rewrote it.
It's about how our wetland ecosystems in Wisconsin are just like so precious and so cool, and it's hard for humans to interact with them because they're squishy, muddy places, but the wildlife that lives there is like incredibly special.
Blair's play, The Lonely Marsh, debuted in the summer of 2026. It tells the story of a marsh that rebounds from devastation. One character, the farmer, tends to his crops surrounding the ecosystem. He interacts with the wildlife, like the frogs, muskrats, and cranes. It's not that the farmer hates the marsh. He just misunderstands it.
I've got an excellent idea this time, exclaimed the farmer. I will plant sunflowers. Everyone loves sunflowers. They are beautiful.
But sunflowers, like corn, prefer dry soil. They are not marsh plants. So the farmer took a bit more away from the marsh and filled it in with soil to plant his field. He eventually saw how his techniques were harming the marsh and the wildlife within it.
The farmer's not evil. He's just like misguided. He's like, no, if I do this, it'll be great for everybody, you know? And so he's really trying to like push his ideas on the marsh, and then eventually he has to be like, oh no, I need to like work with the marsh.
Blair also felt that pull to work with the marsh when creating the play. She went to wetlands across Wisconsin to collect real sounds of cranes. She wrote and recorded music, built puppets of all sizes, creating characters with the cattails she gathered. And even though the play is titled The Lonely Marsh, as you've heard, it's not really alone.
My name is Jake Crow, and I am the narrator.
Ribbit, and we have the frog.
And the muskrat, don't forget.
And of course, the lonely marsh.
Oh, and that farmer that just moved in, too.
What resonated with you with this play?
I think the fact that there is so many characters that we don't think about. The marsh becomes a character, the frog, the muskrat, they're all these different characters, and they're all connected without knowing it, which kind of makes me think that we're all connected to the marsh and to the other ecosystems that were around.
Today there are roughly 90,000 sandhill cranes in the upper Midwest, and their range is expanding. But Blair said our relationship with the wetlands, the home of the crane, is still fraught. And she hopes the audience will connect with the squishy, sometimes muddy, lonely marsh.
I just want them to like identify with wetlands in a way where they maybe haven't thought about them before, and just like look, and that's like the last line is like, if you see a puddle in a cornfield, that's not a puddle, that's a lonely marsh waiting. So it's like falling back in love with this special ecosystem.
That story was produced by Mackenzie Crummy with sound design by Tyler Ditter.
The music you hear was created by Julia Blair. The next showing of The Lonely Marsh is at 11 a.m. Sunday, August 23rd at Greenbush Growing Cooperative in Plymouth.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton.
This is WPR News.
We just got a behind-the-scenes look at a new live puppet performance called The Lonely Marsh. And now the play's creator, Julia Blair, joins us to talk more about this project and what it means to her. The Appleton artist wrote, directed, and scored the play. Julia, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Some people might think of puppet shows as elementary, as simple topics, but conservation is a big issue, a hard issue to tell. What do you make of that and being able to put a topic like this into a puppet show?
Once I had committed and I was like, the Marsh is the main character, I had to grapple with, okay, this is a show, it's being commissioned for children, I'd like it to speak to adults as well, but like, how do I get the audience to identify with the Marsh? Just being that, I think people who are in conservation know about how special wetlands are, but a lot of people don't interact with them because they're just difficult to interact with. And so
They're wet. They're mushy. It's not like you're going to, you know, walk deeply into a wetland unless there is a boardwalk.
Exactly. So, that was my main challenge, was to identify with the place, I would say.
Can you describe some of these characters in the puppet show, maybe the crane puppets or the frog?
Yeah. So there's the Lonely Marsh, and then the main sidekick is a frog. It's a green frog. If you listen to the mating call of a green frog, it's a very derpy kind of like bong sound. And so I kind of wanted the frog to be like always there, but not necessarily appreciated by the Marsh. And there's a muskrat who is, I would say, a static character. The muskrat does not learn any lessons because it doesn't need to learn any lessons. It's already living its best life. But everyone around the muskrat is sort of like, the farmer's like, oh, the muskrat's a pest. And the Marsh is like, this muskrat's just kind of weird, does weird stuff. But turns out to be a very integral part of the Marsh, which is something the Marsh has to learn.
How about the cranes?
The cranes are whooping cranes, and they are the keepers of time for the Marsh. They come in every spring. They're loud. They raise a cult there. They distinguish the Marsh. And this is all, this concept is all stuff from Aldo Leopold's essay, but it's very much talked about in the play as well. And so the cranes are just an honor to the Marsh, and everyone knows that it's not just a marsh, it's a crane marsh. And so when they don't come back, the Marsh has lost its identity, but also its like sense of time. And it knows that springtime is there, but it doesn't know when it starts or how it turns into fall. And it's just kind of adrift.
You also have this farmer who loves the land, who tends the land, and then cultivates the Marsh. What does the farmer learn?
Yeah, so my farmer, and I've spoken to some farmers after the play about this, who have different thoughts about it. The farmer in this play is a monoculture farmer. So this farmer does love the land and wants the land to be healthy. But he's planting corn, and he's planting, eventually he tries to put in a sunflower field. But, you know, being a farmer is really difficult. And so he's just trying to expand the fields. And so basically he's impeding on the Marsh over the course of the play.
There's the tension.
Yes, exactly. Because he's just like, I need to like make this farm work.
Yeah.
So he plants the corn. The muskrat kind of messes up that plan for him. He plants the sunflowers, same thing. But then he starts to see that the Marsh is really unwell and the frog is really unwell. And he starts to realize that his farm might be healthier, actually, if he let the Marsh be successful.
Now, you travel to Prague. You work with a master puppeteer. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what you learned and how your ability to build these puppets has evolved?
Yeah, absolutely. So prior to going to Prague, I think I had this very much notion of puppeteering, which is like, it's a completely manufactured world and you don't see the puppeteer. You're only seeing the world that's created. And going to Prague, I learned how to make marionettes. So it's wood carving. We designed it, made the marionettes, and then we put on a play. And so when we put on a play, I realized that the line between puppeteer and puppet is like a lot less precious in
Prague and traditional European puppet theater. A lot of times they're interacting with each other. They're just right there. So I thought that was really interesting. Also just, it was just a little more casual, but, you know, very beautiful and incredibly, like, thought out and earnest. So
that must have given you more freedom as an artist to say, it's okay to show the puppeteer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so the crane puppets are worn by these two dancers, and you can see their body, you know, they're not hidden or anything.
Hmm. As part of the conservation aspect of the play, as you mentioned, you specifically picked a frog and a muskrat to be these characters. Are there pivotal things that we learn from these characters?
Yeah. So, you know, frogs are common still, even in small wetland areas, but frogs, being amphibians, breathe through their skin, and is, like, not completely, but, like, a lot of their breathing comes through their skin. And so if the soil is very unwell, they'll be an indicator of that. They can't handle, you know, certain imbalances. And so they're just an indicator of soil health in that way. And so, like, marsh wetland health. And muskrats have a very interesting relationship with marshes. They build mounds that they live in, and they're just these big piles. Like, if you look up a muskrat mound, they just look like piles of dirt and, like, sticks and stuff. But they enter them from underneath, and they eventually leave the mounds. The mounds decompose. It's a part of the process of the marsh. They're also a part of the general, like, overarching evolution of marshes, where there are years of flooding because of the muskrat eating a lot of the vegetation, followed by years of drought, the seedbed. So they're just, like, really integral to the life of the marsh.
So you write this play, you build these puppets, mm-hmm. you put together the score, write songs for this play. How did this project, The Lonely Marsh, stretch you as an artist?
Oh, it stretched me more than anything undertaking I've ever done, for sure. I come from playing in bands and writing music. I've written some film scores, so I've done, like, some underscoring. But I think the two biggest things was, like, I've never written a story this long before. And so being a narrative writer in that way was challenging. And I sent the script to my friend Sarah Gent, who's a Montessori teacher, for, like, age appropriateness. And then my mm-hmm. friend Ben DeCourcy, who's a writer, to just kind of be like, hey, is this, like, sounding okay? So that was a big challenge. And then building the puppets, particularly the cranes. The other puppets were a bit smaller, but the cranes are just so big and so physical. And to get the wings to be able to expand with the head movement was extremely challenging. But we did it.
And then the music.
Yeah, the music came naturally to me, I think.
Yeah.
And it, honestly, it helped with writing the narrative. I started just trying to write, and then I was like, this feels weird. So I started, like, underscoring it and writing as I went. And then it, like, kind of really came out that way. So the music was like, oh, this is, like, the thing that I can come back to about this.
Does watching it on stage, what does that do to you? Does it give you new ideas? How do you receive it when you see it put, you know, to life?
Yeah, it does give me new ideas. When I was, like, getting close to being done, people are like, what are you going to do next? And I'm like, well, I just need to do this right now. But then, like, performing it and being really proud of how it turned out, but at the same time having changes I want to make and new ideas for how to present the story even better. It felt, like, really good, actually, to be able to, like, have those notes for myself.
What message do you hope to take away from the show? What do you hope your audiences learn?
I hope that, I guess, I succeeded in my challenge and they do identify with the marsh, and that when they're... So the last line of the play invites the listener, when they're driving out to in a cornfield and they see, you know, a wet puddle area or next to a parking lot, to think that that's not just a puddle, that's another lonely marsh waiting. And so if I can get people to start looking at wetlands and feeling something, and kind of starting to think about how special they are, then that's it.
Well, Julia, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Julia Blair is the writer and director for The Lonely Marsh, a play about Wisconsin's diverse wetlands and its creatures. She is an Appleton artist and musician. The next performance of The Lonely Marsh is set for Sunday, August 23rd at 11 a.m. at Greenbush Growing Cooperative in Plymouth. Mm-hmm.